Lost my heart and hope to die. If I ever, ever told a lie, feelings and guilty just said, choose a bad place when you're dead. Washington, he never lied.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of a fanfic. Itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my lovely co-host, Weird. Say hi, Weird.
Sir Weirdington Esquire isn't here. I am the boo-boo fool. I feel bad about, like, I was exhausted coming into the podcast last week, which might explain why I listened to it again and was struck by the number of times I went, what is word? Wrong is word. here's a vocabulary, like, hey kids, the word of the day is melanpropism. as derived from a Victorian English play, wherein a character named Mrs. Melanprompt, in an effort to sound smart, continually used the wrong word. An example line from Mrs. Melanprompt: oh, she was as stubborn as all the allegories along the Nile. I am unforgiving of myself. Today we got an episode. Man,
yeah.
If my skull meats were boiling last week, today, Just gonna start making vowel noises by the end of this one.
Noises.
Yeah, I am in a hot box, and our primary host, Fi, hasn't done that. What do you call it? Sleep? He hasn't had any of that. hasn't had any of those. Had any of them sleeps.
Yeah, haven't done me a sleep.
And on top of that, we're coming in on the heels of the end of book two.
Yeah, starting into book three. Fucking season three, book three, act three.
Yeah, so it's the opening of book three. We did an entire episode to recap, so I'll put it in the briefest terms as possible. Our heroine, Blackjack, finally died once and for all at the conclusion of almost literally a passion play. Crucified and abused, we'll say.
Oh man, I'm gonna have to have something I have to talk about by the end of this pod, this end of this episode that I almost forgot about. You just reminded me of. So
we gotta just give me one second, end, otherwise I have to take a note. Like,
yeah, I have to note. Just gonna talk about BJ's death at the end. Because I know an interesting factoid that is worth mentioning.
Crucified for
her own sins. Yeah,
literally a baptism herself to herself,
for herself, on yeah. herself, to herself.
And end of story. Game over. Why the fuck are we still here? Like, why? Why is there a book? What perk did she get for her heartbeat stopping?
Yeah, she just loaded from a previous save.
So totally extra dead that like ultra terminal cancer. Fatal bleeding out, like, in the event
resuscitation?
Yes.
Yeah.
Resuscitation is clearly what I meant. in the event of a resuscitation, still dead. In terminal condition on multiple fronts. And without any with even less will to live than ever. Why is there a book? What, how do we open?
Okay, so I guess I should get into it. Where do we go now from here? So we open up in a scene that is not awful in terms of its prose in comparison to basically everything else in this book, in which we see a ghostly blackjack floating on through the cosmos. There's a lot of really like purple prose about like very weird subjective interaction, which I think is really interesting as a way to convey like this is an afterlife that you're moving through. And there's a lot of talk of her moving through orbs of light and them being like memories and interacting with
them. Oh god! She can't even escape them in death!
Even in death,
they
there is
hound her to the end of the cosmos!
Even in death, there is still orb. But the only thing that super matters about this scene is Blackjack is talking about the stars and all
the,
this
is
shit.
is finding out that memory orbs have transcended, like the litter of memory orbs through this setting has transcended the material plane.
Oh Christ. The only thing about this that's worth anything is that like this is like an opportunity for Blackjack to like get a proper final goodbye from her mother, because her like mother orb appears and says, and they say kind of like nice things, and then we I don't know, it's hard to explain the scene.
No, I'm just amused by like it's the if you were to like make a comic of this, you would have to like ape Jack Kirby's style as hard as possible.
Yes.
Because not only like is Kirby dots a thing, like Kirby like expressed the cosmic with random spheres. The mother orb is an extremely
extremely Jack Kirby kind of thing. Say goodbye to the mother orb. So yeah, because I've been hyping this chapter up a lot, but this is where this goes super off the rails. So stay tuned for the coming descriptions.
God damn it! I'm not like brief tangent. I find myself forced to like try and do a comic inspired by the toil we have done here for nearly 30 episodes. And now I'm just about sold that, like, when the protagonist enters the wasteland for the first time, the ground is made of crystal spheres. Spheres as far as the eye can see!
Everywhere. Oh, Christ.
Even when she gets to, like, dry land, like, actual, like, earth, it's still, like, intermittent orbs.
The water is also orbs. God.
No, it trickles through like an endless like fancy water purifier. There's just, like rivers cutting through divots in the orb pile.
Oh man! All right, fuck. So, BJ then like floats into like a like mind space. It's hard to explain exactly how this transitions, but she just kind of like she's in a classroom basically that's like a not real space where she's like initially she thinks it's like a memory of her old classroom as a kid, and then she's like, oh wait, this is like because she realizes she's still like an adult though, so it doesn't make any sense. And then like her teacher shows up and then like starts talking with the voice of Professor Zodiac, because apparently we're in the Matrix now, and like in her mindscape, the thing she equates with a classroom and what she equates with a teacher looks like this for the purposes of like symbolic interaction. Because apparently, we find out through Silverstar real quick that apparently her and BJ's brains are hooked together somehow right now.
Why? Why would you do this? I was floating through the Kirby spheres. And
basically. Basically for a long-winded tutorial section. I was happy amongst the orbs, and you brought me back.
I was among my people.
Fuck. Okay, so
here in this gross material, this gross phenomenal world,
this
I am doomed to become
orbless
done.
World.
But there, out there, I can become orb.
In this gross, broken, orbless world. I was happy. But anyways, we get a fun tutorial section because we get explained in gross detail, like not gross, like in large detail about how they're gonna fix Blackjack, because apparently she's still alive. They managed to resuscitate her.
What did I just say, Story?
they managed to resuscitate her, and yeah, she even questions, like, I'm still full of tumor. And they managed to get her to a place which has sufficient enough medical technology that they've managed to pull all those parts out of her, like all of her organs primarily.
don't need these.
Yeah, basically. And we get a big rundown of exactly what's going to happen. But first, this is, I jumped the gun a little bit. This is the scene in which they talk about the idea that BJ is distantly related to Twilight Sparkle. Though it does the same problem that I always have, where the character says it's a theory, but the problem with a story like this that doesn't have any sense of nuance, theories are just canon, like they're just accurate. Same with mythology. Heck, it's a hard. This is going to be hard and weird to explain. The rundown of what they plan to do is that Glory managed to like con everybody in the hoof and managed to pull in every favor she could possibly get from everyone that BJ has ever helped. Which is supposed to seem like a big deal, but like when you think about it, she really didn't help that many people. She helped the faction leaders, so like they care.
You and managed that's what to really matter.
You managed to maintain the status quo, Blackjack. But yeah, they pulled everything together. So the plan is that they're going to turn Blackjack into a cyber pony. Which they explicitly said was impossible, but magnanimous Jesus Horse, who inspired so much of the waste, inspired Zodiac to like give up the rest of her robotic body in her tank, to fill her fill Blackjack up with cybernetic organs. There is a lot of description exactly how Blackjack's new body is going to work, but the rundown is that she now has four cyber legs, a whole host of cybernetic organs, a pair of cybernetic eyes, and her face is really like her. Like she has they go into a lot of detail about like exactly how her anatomy works, but like the important details is she has robo legs, robo organs, and she can eat metal now. Metal and gems, because like her parts require like energy, and the way to maintain that energy is to eat gems, because it's a power source in the setting.
So they've preserved her skin and skeleton.
Basically, no, even her skeleton's not like most of her skeleton's been like rebuilt. It's weird.
Skin and some of her spine.
And some of her meat. But most of her digestive tract, her lungs, and her like throat, like basically her entire digestive tract and her lungs are now replaced with cybernetics. Oh, and her heart.
I'm starting to think that, like, okay, we've built a Blackjack real doll.
I mean, kinda?
We're gonna teach it to think it's Blackjack.
She still has her brain, I guess, so that's something. I don't know. So I talked about before about how people totally should make fun of me for getting really into the series for really superficial means. I'm a huge sucker for robotics and cybernetics in stories. So I'm like, oh, this is a robot horse. That's super cool. I want to read about robot horse. And like that was largely what got me through a lot of the early chapters. Like, it's the like, you know, oh, when are they gonna get to the fireworks factory? Like,
don't worry. Just gotta like grit your teeth and bear it while through Itchy's rape scene.
Because Poochie's gonna turn into a robot.
Just around the corner.
But yeah, there's a lot of
literally
goofy...
RoboCop, isn't she? Like, she's super proud of continuing to be a fucking cop throughout all this shit. And now she is.
She's a robot. Yeah.
She has become the Robert Cop.
Yes. She even gets like RoboCopped at the beginning of this. Like at this, like the beginning of RoboCop happened to her a chapter ago. So like, that's also like. And in that case, that was also a biblical metaphor.
Yeah, no, Robert Cop is a Jesus. Yeah, that's.
Not only is this My Little Pony fan fiction, it's also robot fan fiction and Bible fan fiction. Oh Christ! But BJ also like needles. Zodiac on like, why are you doing this? Like, I don't deserve to be saved, and
more importantly, but, don't particularly want to be saved. I do not consent to this, yeah. This process.
Yeah, and there's basically
I didn't ask for this.
I mean, yeah. Except her legs.
Specifically asked for not this.
Except her eye, her limbs are white instead of black, and she doesn't have cool like eye sunglasses. But she's like you know it's she needles Zodiac because the whole thing that like Zodiac wanted to like you know get her body back and Zodiac's like eh, I can wait like the 50 years before I run out, which is dumb because we were kind of implied that there was some sense of urgency to her getting her body back, like she really wanted it out of being out of a jar, and that was the whole thing they managed to like
also. She's premises being like one third horse, like she is a Zordon, like she only has enough like prosthetic to keep her like existing in her tube. So how does like somebody in massively worse condition plus not enough cybernetics to keep a non-combat chassis going equal one full Robert Cop?
The
math seems off here.
Okay, I'll answer that now. They explain this a little bit later, but they fill in the gaps with a bunch of Deus, because a detail we get filled in on is that Zodiac like bought Deus's corpse off the Finders, so they pulled a bunch of cybernetics out of him and put them into BJ. But since she's a main character, they're nice and friendly cybernetics that don't hurt anymore for no reason. Don't worry about it. But yeah, she's got like my favorite goofy detail of it though, because it just makes me laugh to think about, is that she has like white enamel like limbs to go with the rest of her body, but she has rubber soles on her hooves, and I just can't help but imagine like on certain surfaces they're just squeaking around as she walks.
Oh, here comes the tornado of death, Blackjack.
fucking hell. Zodiac also mentioned that she's pretty fucking useless despite being like a doctor, and the whole do no harm aspect of the Collegiate is sort of pretty threadbare. And she's basically betting on the future that BJ could potentially like work towards, is the whole sort of tone of this chapter. Anyways, it's time for Blackjack to wake up into the real world now. Yay! Blackjack wakes up in a really clean hospital bed and like panics mega hard, obviously because her limbs are now robotic and admittedly, I'm going to talk up the first half of this chapter a lot, partly because the back half of this chapter is infuriating in ways that I cannot begin to explain until we get there. But One of the things I'm a big sucker for with cybernetics is a lot of, like, emphasis on, like, how they feel and when they move in a story, and how, like, how a character's body feels different to a real, to, like, not a real person. That's wrong.
Sensory inputs are different. Like, you don't have a tactile, like, feedback on every inch of your limb anymore. Just wherever they thought to install them.
And similar thing with her organs, where, like, when she's, like, panicking and she's, like, trying to scramble because her robo legs are kind of not automatic, but they, like, move. They don't move quite the way she thinks they are, so she's, like, flailing around a bunch. But she's also, there's also, like, a lot of thought to give in about, like, how, like, her like, the pace of her breath hasn't increased, or, like, how her heartbeat hasn't picked up in pace in response to the panic, because they're synthetic organs, and how that just feels really weird and alien. That kind of stuff I just really, really like in a cybernetics kind of story. Like, it's just, it's weird stuff that you'd have to acclimatize to when having cybernetics. Like, it would, there'd be a huge, like, rehabilitation period with basically any cybernetic enhancement. But that's just me. That's just things I think are interesting in a story about robots. I like robots. is the shorthand. I almost forgot this line when I read it over the first time, and I needed to include it because we need to talk about this. But a thing, because BJ has new eyes now, right? She has cyber eyes, which, like, they're supposed to be fully functional eyes, but it's super funny to imagine that she has, like, the cyber eyes from Ghost in the Shell, where they just look like bottle caps over where her eyes should be.
They're specifically Bato's, like,
yeah,
archaic cyber eyes. Which probably explained why he went with those when everybody else, everybody and their dog, literally has fully,
fully functional eyes or fully, like. Yeah. But there's a new detail that's a new thing that's been added to her, like, because something I haven't touched on super much about in the setting, because it just hasn't come up until now, is that, like, part of the Pip Buck's basic powers that it can do is it also gives you, like, an augmented reality overlay that, like, gives you all your, like, biometric feedback. But an additional thing that's been added because she has cyber eyes now is she now has a crosshair in the middle of her vision. So when I lost my mind really early into this podcast, when I realized that the entire theme of the story is just Blackjack turning into a gun, it was literal. Like, she literally is turning into a gun. She has become more mechanical and more gun-like.
You see, I was kind of holding back because I was trying to figure out how to formulate a Terminator joke that when you, like, pan behind the Terminator's eyes and see what it's seeing, and, like, evaluating, like, things in stark terms, and thinking of, like, how to, like, formulate a joke of, like, she looks to her side, there's P-21, and, like, indicators, douchebag. But, like, why? Jesus. Like, the only practical function of doing that would be to ensure your cyborg literally, like, thinks of themselves as a hammer and can see only nails. Yeah. Like, the psychological impact that would have to constantly be hallucinating a target reticle over everyone you meet. Everything in your environment. At all times, you're reminded of your capacity to do violence to anyone or anything in your environment. I'm sort of reminded of I'm going to try and make this as quick as I can. Two video game tangents. There's two interesting, like, things that video games can teach us in this way. The Way of the Samurai series, at the very least, Way of the Samurai 3 had an interesting gimmick where you have two buttons, and the game never lets you forget about these two buttons at the top of your screen. Like, it never turns off, no matter how far in the game you are. It always reminds you that this button quick draws your sword, and this button allows you to grovel. So, at all times, at all interactions, you're reminded that at any moment you can turn this into a fight. Like, at any moment you can, these two buttons instantly stop any dialogue tree. Hmm. Like a character can be in the middle of like a cinema, in the middle of talking to you, and you can end their conversation line. You can end their dialogue instantly by pressing either of these two buttons. Because one will turn it into a fight, and the other changes the conversation to something entirely different. Because you've thrown your forehead to the ground and are groveling at them, and it really like sells the whole like you are in a Kurosawa movie thing. Like these are the two like extreme responses, the two extreme powers a samurai has at any given moment, to show total deference and humility, and to cut the person's head off. and so that comes immediately to mind into like how BJ inevitably is going to like be forced to relate to the world, like the psychological consequences of this weird injury they've done to her. That now everything is a target. Like she's reminded at all times, every second of every day of the like vulnerabilities and strike potential,
Every single person they meet.
And the other is a free game that, you know what, I'll just keep a note of it. So, end of tangent, to be continued at the end of the episode.
All right. I think the concept of the crosshair eye stuff is super interesting, because I think it's one of the very few times where, like, Somber feels like they're going somewhere with a concept. It's nowhere good, because, like, it always comes back to the problem of, there's going to be a lot of talk about this because BJ's a cyborg now, that, like, this story falsely equivocates the concept of cyberfication of a person's body is equivalent to them losing their humanity, which is a disgusting parable that is in every cyberpunk future story, and I fucking hate it. This is very clearly coming from specifically Shadowrun, because it deals with the idea of essence and soul loss in this story, but it's a thing from cyberpunk, and it's a concept I've never agreed with, that the idea that, like, what is essentially getting prosthetics is eating at your soul, is a disgusting, like, what do these people think of people who have, like, pacemakers and fucking, like, insulin pumps? Like, are they monsters to you? Are they less human? What about a person who has, like, just a prosthetic limb or a robotic limb? Like, we are getting to that future. Like, what do these fucking authors think of those people? It's a really foul way to look at disability as, like, making you innately less human. And the story deals a lot with that, but, like, not in a way that, like, I think is good. I guess I should actually get moving on with the story as it happens. Fucking, yeah, she's in Ten Pony Tanner. I just said it wrong. Ten Pony Tower. This will be important in a second, but I just want to like remind everyone that for the next couple of scenes, BJ is basically rubber hosing around again, but like with robo limbs. Like she's basically walking around like she's on ice skates because her limbs don't want to do what she wants them to do. That's really comical.
An immediately amusing, cute image until we found out about the rest of it. waking up a cyber horse and like the panic skittering pony with metal robo limbs. And a Darth Vader head is what I'm like, because parts of her head like and eyes are like.
Yeah. Is
she Horse Vader? Like to what? Like
a thing that comes up in a cool scene later on, but like just to talk about it because cyber is on the brain right now. Her entire like so her eyes and most of her jaw has been entirely replaced with cybernetics, but like basically the jaw part of her face has like synthetic skin over top of it, so you can't tell that her, like, jaw is all robotic as well. Because there is a critical moment in the story where, like, BJ, like, takes a lot of injury to her face and realizes that she's way more mechanical than she initially assumed. Like, up to that point, she's just like, oh, well, I've got some organs that are different and robo-legs, but I'm not really, like, that cybered. But, like, the real revelation that, like, there's way more moving parts in her than she realized. We will get to Darth Vader Pony later. Heck. Anyways, we're in.
She's more like Pony Raiden.
Yes. At some point, I will have to blare the entirety of Rules of Nature. because the story just gets more and more cybernetics in it as it goes along. Like, just cyborgs just become a big part of the story after this point. Because Metal Gear! Where was I? Ten Pony Tower. I get to talk about this now. So, the importance of Ten Pony Tower, because they talk about being there and it's just a really nice place. The important detail, this is when the whole thing goes off the fucking rails and never fucking comes back. Ten Pony Tower is not in the Hoof. We are no longer in Hoofington for now. We are no longer in the Hoofington Exclusionary Zone. We are in the original story now, because in Ten Pony Tower is in Manhattan, and Manhattan is in the original story because it's in the Heartland Equestria, which means that we are a stone's throw away from the main characters, and this is right around the time a particular event happens. Welcome, my friends, to the first DLC chapter of the story.
What? I thought the justification between for microwave hallway was fucking okay. Alright, so we've moved thousands of miles, or at least hundreds. Okay, isn't ever mentioned at all, like, any of the logistics involved in packing up her organs, and, like, why would... No.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, what is the cataclysmic event that's about to happen? from another better story.
So the reason that this chapter happens is for the worst reasons. So it to catch people up very very quickly on one of the plot details of the original story. Right around this time when this is happening we're getting close to the climax, where the main character, Little Pip, is going to face off the twin antagonists of the story, Red Eye, who is like an evil fascist, and the Goddess, who is a amalgam of Alicorn monsters. Those characters are in cahoots, and an important detail about the Goddess, and this creates this really elaborate plan that's actually pretty clever in the story that does not need this chapter to exist to make it make sense. Little Pip, for really complicated reasons, because the Goddess can read minds, has to do a plan and then have all of our memories of that plan scrubbed and then enact what she's going to do and hope that, like, her, like, amnesiac self can do the thing that she needs to. Because if he remembers what she was planning on doing, the Goddess would be able to, like, stop it in a heartbeat. But it makes more sense in the actual story, whatever. But the thing is that means that there is an allotted amount of time that we never get told about as an audience that happens, because it's just exempt from the story. It's a detail that's never factored in. So there's a bunch of missing time, and that meant that this asshole thought this would be a great place to fit my own self-insert OC into the fucking story.
No.
my original character Donut Steel has come in, but
it's
we're not
Rogue
quite there
One
yet.
All over again.
It is Rogue One all over again. How do we get this? The plans of this Death Star? We don't need to know that. Like fucking movie, we never needed to know that.
And worse over, I fully expect shit like the. Oh yes, the designers intentionally put in this massive flaw. It failing to understand that it's not a massive flaw. Like it's like and. I'd go on for like 15 minutes about
Star Wars.
Well, specifically how fucking nerds, losers, don't get things. Anyway, how the exhaust port was fine.
Yeah,
it was in fact you could argue better than fine. Like, just as a thing, like as a thing that was overlooked during like the design and engineering process. Like,
anyways, a couple more boxes have to get checked off first before we get into that shit, though. So apparently, BJ has now been held at mouth gunpoint that she is now a member of the Reapers, whether she wants to or not. She is considered a Reaper by the rest of the factions. This doesn't really like this is a detail that I think is more problematic than I think than the author intended, but it's just meant to be like an interesting hook that like, oh yeah, she's one of the Reapers now. She's one of the family of murderers. And it's like, that's a bad concept, but fucking whatever.
We need to talk about it real briefly.
Yeah.
Because principally, all of these resources have been diverted to bring her back from the dead because she had gotten in one way or another, in a couple cases, sort of inexplicably. But anyway, the fucking Steel Rangers owed her. The Reapers wanted her, like have wanted her as a part of their like coalition for a while, and I guess she'd done something for the Finders at some point, and Zodiac just kind of felt bad for destroying her life, for being directly responsible for all of this. And so, like, the bigwigs of the setting come to a table and said, and negotiated bringing this person back to life. And at the end of the conclusion of that negotiation is, Horace Bronson says, and we get to keep her.
There's a token.
Is the implication here? Like,
there's a token sentiment that she's like an honorary Reaper, and no one really takes the title seriously. But like, come on, like, come on. It's because we're supposed to think the Reapers are good guys. Like, that's always the thing. We're supposed to think they're like just a bunch of cute ne'er-do-wells. They're just scamps. They're getting into trouble. Some of these people are rapists and murderers, Somber. They're just scamps.
Boys will be boys.
Like, fuck off. Like, I get that BJ is also a rapist, but, like, that also is a bad plot point. It shouldn't have been in the story. Well, like,
also, she wasn't fond of that. that was a thing imposed on her by a retroactive backstory. That, like, she hated and just had to go get crucified. Like, she just had the sin slate cleaned. Like,
yeah, she was just baptized out of it. So, yeah. Oh, man. Okay. All right. We're going to have to get through these next couple of bits together. We need to come together as an audience. So, there's a kind of cool scene that I like where she's talking to Rover, who's like the, you know, like the fucking Native American stereotype dog man who is also a cyborg, who is like he like walks her through how to like actually use her cybernetics, and is a actually interesting scene. I like when characters who are stereotypes have more than a character than just being a stereotype, so this is a nice thing to add to him, that he's like kind of he is like a super laser focus on cybernetics as like a tool. It's because it's a skill in trade, so he always is willing to talk about it regardless of how much he hates people. And I think that's a really cool thing to add to his character. The last detail, though, is BJ's like, it's like, well, I mean, cybernetics are a lot better than mutations, because, like, at least I don't have fingers. And on that, like, thought, her fucking hoof flips out into a bunch of robo fingers. So Blackjack now has robo hands. And is as fucking weird as you'd immediately assume it would be. just.
It does have to be drawn.
Yes, it has been drawn.
Bad.
Yes, there is many a picture out there of Blackjack, with hands.
I didn't even know that, guns. Because if it was my responsibility to draw it, oh.
Alright, I don't know if this is like kayfabe bombing or really.
No, I am actually close. I kept trying to say words.
Did the revelations hit you?
There's no, it's all bad. Every version of that is real bad.
Yeah.
Because, like, the two-segmented, like, pony leg, because of most of the pony leg is fucking finger.
Yeah, you'd have to imagine that it's a hand with a very tiny set of fingers on the end of the tip of your finger, basically.
Then you just make it, like, oh. Even within the abstraction of, like, a blocky flash horse. Oh, human arms on a horse? This is straight
up.
Yeah,
I've got some fan art to show you. You'll get a good sense of it. Yeah. I knew Weird was not going to handle robo hands very well. We haven't even gotten to the bad part of this chapter yet.
Okay.
Anyways, the one scene I like... BJ and Glory reunite, and it's pretty adorable. Like it's a lot of cute back and forth between the two of them. Though, like BJ, like by accident, kind of like a muscle twitch and a robo arm swings by and like knocks a bunch of shit off of something, which is only really important because it leads into this really extended scene where like the like so far only doctor outside that like seems to actually like have any like. Care for their patients at all is there. It's a dude named Helping Hoof who discusses sort of just cut it. But he talks about like BJ's mental state because like BJ basically spends a bunch of time talking to him while cleaning up this mess and is like catastrophizing the shit out of everything and reducing all of her interactions with other people, which is really okay. So there's a very specific line that gets carried in this chapter that like becomes a huge theme in the story, which doesn't make any sense. That Blackjack is like, I'm nothing special. Like I shouldn't have been saved. Like there are better ponies out there that could have been saved in my place, which is true. But one of the biggest problems with it is that the line "I'm not special" is categorically, observably false. She is the direct descendant of one of the Ministry Mayors, and the story setting has a really bad problem with blood legacy because a big like it's mostly a flaw in the original story because it's a joke about how a bunch of the technology could be bypassed by being tangentially related to a member of the Ministry, which creates a bunch of security problems. But here it's like used to elevate the character and make her seem more special and great and fantastic. Like from this point on, Blackjack starts gaining a whole bunch of weird hyper competency and things she is supposed to be bad at. And the only real change that comes down to is because she's Twilight Sparkle's great granddaughter. And like, A chud could argue that the reason why this is because she's been emboldened by her realization of her legacy, which is like the most fashy like line of thinking possible.
No,
like,
I mean
that's literal fascist thinking. Like
on a meta level, and perhaps even to some degree on a literal level, it's because she's been baptized of the parts of her that were not a direct self insert. she's undergone the passion play. She's been crucified for her sins, and therefore the sins, the things that Somber like hates in her, the like parts of her that is just him self-flagellating, those have been purified, those have been removed. And so now she is free to just accumulate power.
Yeah. Like, she still definitely self-flagellates her the rest of the story, but it rings super hollow. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, man, I'm nothing special. You're literally the son of God. Shut up. I'm not special. Like,
she gets to whine about it because that's part of the, that's the author, like whining. What I'm saying is the story is no longer obligated to flagellate her.
Yeah,
the world is no longer contorting to simply hurt her. Let's bring back a meme from way at the beginning of the podcast. This is fucking John Cena syndrome all over again.
Yeah,
it's the ringside announcers going, oh no, how's John Cena gonna get out of this one? They've really got him pinned down, and meanwhile, you look up on the stage, and Cena's smiling and, like, no-selling everything.
Yeah.
Juggling, like, his competitors. We, the audience, are being assured and told that, like, this character is so humble and so put upon. Meanwhile, the actual evidence of the events contradicts the narration.
You cannot sell this character, is the basic sentiment. But yeah, there's a big tone shift in the story because of the problem that, like, because it's pretty obvious to some degree that Somber does not have good, like, self-care principles and does not have good, like, does not have the tools to articulate the concepts of depression. The only thing that he can possibly do is the, like, tough love treatment mentality to depressive episodes that, like, I hate that I'm alive or I hate that I'm here because it's not fair. And it's just the psychologist going, well, I think it's pretty unfair that you don't trust all your friends. And it's like, well, I mean, that's not a great sentiment. Like, just putting it on, you should learn to trust people, you dummy, you big loser. Like, put your big boy pants on is not super great. I'm mostly just stalling because I want to avoid the rest of this chapter, but I guess I have to get to it. Incredibly hollow self-care aside, BJ is hanging out at the hospital still because she still has to recuperate. Also, by the way, they purged all the taint of Blackjack's body, so they don't even have to worry about that problem. That's a thing from the original story that, like, Ten Pony Tower has the ability to do that, but it's very expensive. But, you know, money is no longer an object in the story because, like, it's late into the story and they don't care anymore. So, you know, just money is no longer a concern, even though that was a big deal in the original parts. But don't worry about it.
Yeah, all right, yeah. She's the passion project of all these, like, undemocratic sovereigns.
If these characters are being played straight, they would never stop guilting her into doing whatever they wanted. And it would work. But BJ is just so incredibly magnanimous and holy now at this point. But yeah, and then Little Pip shows up, is what my notes just say. They're fucking hanging out in the, like, you know, we talk, like Weird talks a lot about the concept of, like, and then being a huge problem. This is the most and then. So a much better character walks into the story. This tiny little adorable put-upon horse who is very tired and very relatable. Little Pip is actually just better than this character by huge sums, even though Little Pip is just as edgy. But yeah, she just shows up at the hospital that they're at, because it's the same hospital that the little Pip uses. And like all of her friends are there, so like the whole crew from the original story. So little Pip is there, Velvet Remedy is there, and Zenith is there, and Best Boy Calamity is also there. Except his dialogue is garbage in this whole scene, and is not like representative of his character. It's basically like, yeehaw, I'm Southern. Is his entire like personality in this?
And everyone came to my birthday. There was the Ninja Turtles, except for Donatello, because he I don't like him. And Superman and Batman and Spider-Man were also at my birthday. They all told me how great they thought I was.
Oh yeah, and
Spider-Man and Batman got into an argument, but I made them cool down. I made them friends.
They fucking so we talk around a lot of the joke of the fanfiction of a fanfiction here down here at the fanfic podcast. But Christ, this is peak fanfic. The fucking all these characters from the original short story show up and just spend all this time talking about how cool Blackjack is. Like, there is such a like insecurity of in the tone of this, where Blackjack will be they basically talk shop and compare notes between their two stories, and like, you know, Little Pip had a bunch of bad things happen, but like Blackjack can always one up that with a much more fucked up story. Like, oh yeah, Velvet Remedy almost lost a limb. Well, that's funny. That reminds me of the time I lost all of my limbs. Or like, oh yeah,
Spider-Man said how much better my pictures were. I also do camera. I also do shoot pictures. And Spider-Man said that I'm so much better than him, even though like he works for the Daily Buggus.
God. It's so tacky. Like, it's just like, above all else, it's just super tacky to do this kind of thing in your story. But they talk about how cool Blackjack is, and basically never shut up about how like this story is just so much better, you guys, than the original story. I fixed it. I made a much cooler story.
Hey guys, did you know that Venom once fought and beat up Superman?
Oh, that's awful. She really is the Venom. Like, just the, like, I don't even really need to like elaborate on that.
The Venom to Little Pip Spider-Man.
This is what is it? What was the fucking name of his comic? Like Lethal Defender, I think, or Lethal Guardian, or something like that.
I have no idea, except that they had a plot point where, well, wait a minute, isn't Venom like supposed to be a cannibal or something? He gets all the nutrients he needs from cannibalism from chocolate instead. Bingo bongo.
Taste like
in our dark adult comic book. Venom eats chocolate.
Yeah. Now we get into the actual. So I talked about before, but this is around the time when Little Pip was doing enacting a big, complicated fuck off plan that she needed to erase her memory for. This is woven into that. So yes, that's right, folks. We are now getting fan fiction in our fanfic of a fanfic. We are getting totally made up drivel just to include the main character. Like, this is nakedly fan fiction at this point. It's amazing. Fucking Lil Pip and Blackjack fucking fight ghouls for a while, and it doesn't matter. They like, Blackjack is mega drunk the whole time, and she's wearing like a bunch of whiskey bottles as a necklace. Scene she just has a bunch of whiskey bottles tied together with string on around her neck.
Wouldn't she need like almost nothing to get like, well, she would either have to drown in it or like require almost nothing to get drunk, because she's got almost no meat left.
She
to suffuse.
She has to drown in it, because she has to like
She has to overcome the filters.
I think she has a synthetic liver, so yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Why not just like? Okay, she's dumb, and also yeah. The story's dumb, and the author's dumb.
Yes.
Because otherwise, if none of those people were dumb, she could just like, all right, control panel liver
off. Yeah. Time to get really drunk. Ugh, God. Fuck, man. This scene.
Bad.
Like
we have achieved the true apotheosis. I thought that we'd.
Oh, we have not hit the apotheosis, motherfucker.
We've reached. This is the top of the mountain. It goes completely fucking bug nuts from here because like. Because this is the end. Like, this is the end point. This is everything that everything has been building up to this. Like, this is like the intersection of prior trends. From here, the light shoots through the prism and explodes into a rainbow. Like, there's nowhere else it can go.
You're not wrong. God. Okay, so let's get to the next thing. The plot point that disgusts me, where fucking Blackjack, I was gonna say gets flirty with Little Pip, but because it's a fucking shitty fanfiction, of course, like Little Pip is already enamored with Blackjack, and BJ is just forward, because Little Pip gets all hot and bothered talking to BJ. Because I've mentioned this before, Little Pip is extremely gay, she carried like the one saving grace of her character in this story is that like Little Pip, who is a tiny baby gay who has never had any interactions with didn't have a lot of romantic interactions with other women, like fawns over any mildly attractive other person that she runs into. It's just her way. This is an excuse for Blackjack to kiss Little Pip, which we are told. Definitely, for sure, Little Pip definitely kissed back. Totally, absolutely. She was totally into it as well. Don't worry about it. Don't think about how...
I'm going to make my own original superhero, Ultra Guy. And in this issue, he meets Superman. And they talk, and Ultra Guy is like better than Superman in every way. And Superman goes... Aw, shucks, you're better than me in every way. And then they kiss. And he's Ultra Guy is also better at that.
Superman's super tongue is no match for my ultra tongue. Oh boy. Also cool. Oh fuck. Get to talk about this too. This is a shitty plot point, Ed. BJ is also an enabler. Another detail where the Blackjack is just trying to be a cooler version of Little Pip. Little Pip also had a drug problem for a while, but it wasn't all of the drugs. It was just one particular drug. Basically, for a really long time, Little Pip was super addicted to what is essentially Adderall in this story. And it puts a lot of weighty emphasis on the idea that she's never really going to be completely clean of the addiction of it, because it's just how, like, addictions work. And in this scene, she fucking relapses, which is a thing that happens in the original story, but because it's part of a detail that we never get, because it's all the, like, amnesic parts that never gets filled in. But it's super cool that, like, Somber thought this was a great idea to make sure that BJ was definitely the person that like got her to get back on the drugs. So that's super cool. That's a great way to make your character seem cool and interesting and awesome. Because BJ gets on a lot of drugs, but then basically gets off them with no consequences. Like she speedballs all of the drugs at one point, and that does not have any lasting effect on her body at all. Not even a little bit. And this is supposed to be the realism story, where things are thought out carefully. Like, I don't even know why I'm so mad about this part, this point. It's just really annoying.
Yeah, I mean, you're right to. I'm silent because I'm trying to, like... I was done being angry about how Blackjack is the more realistic character around the time she was the secret love child of the princess of the universe
and the hero of the Imperium
and Ultra Chad. And so, like, this is now, it's gotten to the point where this is basically par for the course.
Yeah.
But also, like, yeah, no, way to go, like, and then Ultra Guy, like, slips Superman a kryptonite roofie just to show that, like, he's not vulnerable to kryptonite. He's better because he doesn't have a weakness like that.
Yeah, I have all the ultra powers and none of the ultra weaknesses. Christ. There's actually not even much to this chapter. Sorry.
Yeah, I guess that's the way to end that interaction.
Oh, we're not done. I'm just saying we're almost done.
No.
So we got one last incredibly crazy ass dumb scene. The plan that they're actually doing in this is convoluted, but basically, in the original story, really early in the story, they found a nuke in a farm's like basement or silo. I think it was in the grain silo. It might have been in the barn. They found a nuke in a barn, and then they didn't know what to do with it, so they like gave it to a town that they trusted. But it turns out that town was kind of faulty, so they sold that to Red Eye, who's one of the main antagonists, because they wanted like amnesty from his actions. And BJ, no, Little Pip, tricks people into making sure that bomb is underneath the goddess for a later part of the story. It's complicated, but it makes sense in motion. But
yeah, in the greater context of the story.
Yeah. It's built up from like one of the first chapters, so it's not just out of nowhere. Part of this is they have to go to Red Eye's camps that are like, so another detail is that Manhattan is a super bombed out city because it was just was. And the only surviving building is Ten Pony Tower, really. But like, because of the way it is, you can't get to the bottom sections without a certain thing, and the Red Eye has built up all his camps around the area because he plans on storming the tower because it's one of the few bastions of civility that like hasn't sworn allegiance to him. So they go into his camps to do this entire complicated plan, and this is when Blackjack finds out that like Red Eye and Sanguine were working together. So even my cool badass ghoul zombie is working with the real bad guy from the original story, which makes everything 10 times worse. BJ steals some plans and some maps. Yeah, I know, it's Sanguine isn't even the main antagonist this fucking story, and I hate that there's so much weight put on him. They fight some guards for a while. It turns into a big old shindig where they're getting blasted at. Which they only get saved because the goddess shows up and because Blackjack has that deal going on with Lacuna. She like recognizes her and like they manage to parlay some help out of her, since the goddess and Red Eye are only really working together out of a sense of convenience. But that was always that plan is like there that treaty between them is doomed to fail. I'm talking about just a bunch of shit that like is never gonna come up in this again. But don't worry about it.
Don't worry, I won't. I can't.
I know it's. I
look deep inside me.
It's that problem where like I feel like I need to include greater context, but like it's just this is just dumb. Like I wanted my main character in I wanted my OC in your story, like, and so I'm gonna convolute this entire contrived scene just so they're there. But the goddess saves them with promises that BJ can help them to do with Sanguine or something. I don't really even understand it. But the last thing we need to note about it is that, like, okay, we need to get back home, back to Manhattan, and they need to fly there. So, like, the plan is they're gonna ride some of the goddess's alicorns back up to Manhattan proper. So the last scene is like triumphantly a like flock of alucards flying up through the sunset with BJ and Little Pimp on their backs. And BJ at this point has fashioned her bottle necklace into a makeshift crown and has declared herself Queen Whiskey. And fuck, I don't even really know how to finish that. It's so fucking stupid.
We're at opening of book three. All right. Bucket list checked off. It's now time to really go ham. Like, we've wrapped up the remaining, the last thing the story really wanted to do.
Are you just going to keep pushing that this is the end of the story now? Like,
from here, we go beyond.
Yes, we go very beyond. Okay. So, is there any notes very specific that you'd want to bring up?
Mentioned from earlier. Well, I'm trying to think of, man. Oh boy, this is bad.
Yeah, it's real bad.
So she like, wait a minute. Throughout this, the entire latter half of this adventure, she gets just so progressively ultra drunk. Where would she even find all this whiskey?
She bought it, I guess.
Rarer than gold. Who's making new whiskey in the apocalypse? Okay. Yeah, I guess multi-billion-dollar million-dollar man surgery. She gets Robert copped, and the hospital just full of antique alcohol.
Well, I guess a backup Ten Pony Tower is like a super super ritzy. It's like one of the richest towns in the setting, in the original setting. It's not just the hospital; the entire town, like the entirety of this like tower, has been converted into a town.
Anyway,
and, like, yeah.
The important thing is that she conducted this like negotiation with one of the biggest bads in the setting, one of the greatest evils, while completely wasted. Well, utterly blasted.
Yep.
So Queen Whiskey ascends into Valhalla.
Yep. Flight of the Valkyries is playing.
Instead of reading this shit, what you could be playing is EG. IJI. It's a freeware platformer game that is chiefly about war bad. It has one of the most interesting, the art is very, let's say, rough. I'm not gonna say terribly mean things about it, though I could and perhaps even should. But an awful lot of work went into this game for free. And it is has a lot of like different endings, and kind of does one of my favorite things. I've said way early in this podcast that one of my favorite things in video games is that the difficulty mode is your choices, that like you can attempt to beat the game on pacifist mode, and that just means making the decision not to hurt anybody. Things would be so much easier for you if you just killed everyone you met.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, if you can go out of your way to ensure that no one dies, then you're rewarded with finally the satisfying rather than brutally depressing ending.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reminded of EG because relating to like tricks for how to manipulate people's thinking. The story has a gimmick where the invading army is invading and has destroyed Earth because of cultural momentum. Okay. They don't really need Earth's resources, but they do need to endlessly kill. For culture, like for like just like sheer like sort of capitalist consumption commentary.
We're out of frontiers. We gotta make new ones.
And one of the things to like that's part of like the multiple endings and part of like EG's like story and like is that you have a kill counter at the top of your screen and it's diegetic. The character EG can see the kill counter. She can see how many people she's killed. The voice acting actually changes. Like there's like audio clips that start cropping up if you get that kill counter real high, and as like EG's emotional health drains as a result. And part of the lore that like some of the like things you can come across, sort of little Easter eggs that you can read them if you want to, is that apparently the Space Army had a problem, a really severe problem, at one point in its history when the kill counters were introduced. They initially forgot to lock it to enemy kills.
Oh, Jesus.
So anytime you killed anybody, you would increase your score, effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And they realized this was a problem when a ship returned to port completely derelict with a single survivor.
Yeah, they just couldn't hash the enormity. Because the
Marines like wanted to raise their high scores, and they killed everybody, including each other.
I almost forgot, by the way, that I wanted to talk about a detail before we like do all our send off stuff. So now that we've gotten recommendations out of the way, I need to talk about Blackjack's death and how in the one of the original drafts, according to Somber, I don't necessarily believe this, but according to the rumors in the grapevine, including from Somber, the original version of the story was that Blackjack, when she died, would stay dead. And the story would continue on in a post-Blackjack world. That's utter bullshit, because there's no way that the story could continue on with it, but it was what the plan was supposed
maybe
to be.
Her ruby slippers, after all. Like,
what the plan was supposed to be is that Scotch was also distantly related to Twilight Sparkle, as far as I understand.
Right. Which,
and also, Scotch would become the main character, or Glory would become the main character. The only problem with that, I think... primarily, except for all of the other problems you can immediately drum up in your head, is that's bullshit, because there's no way that the story would continue on without Blackjack. No character does anything in the story besides Blackjack. They have no agency, they have no capacity to do anything. They are simply baggage. Some of them have skills like unlocking locks or doing surgery.
P21, the master of unlocking. I believe we should leave these keys with you.
Yes. They don't really contribute to fights outside of Rampage. And even then, Rampage is either fridged or is thrown off screen whenever like really substantial fighting ever occurs. And since the story is largely about combat, it's a very combat driven story. Blackjack is the only character that has to do anything. But just still the I think it's meant to sound like it's a really cool like subversive move of like, oh, we've been following this main character for so long, and now they're dead, and now it's like, and now we're moving on to this other character. There is a reason why a lot of authors don't do this, because especially really bad writers like Somber, they throw all of their eggs into one singular basket, and that basket is their main character. They often make main characters that are far too competent to do any, like to not chew the entire story with their presence. So the concept of this is a total lie on its face. Even if Somber intended to kill the character off and replace her, that would just make the story substantially worse by that facet. But yeah, I always thought it was just an interesting detail that like there's this myth, I guess, that circulated of like what if BJ died and some other character had to take up the reins, and the answer is the story would go nowhere. It would spin its wheels and then be like canceled. Is my like immediate assumption.
Yeah, Somber would get bored because
his baby is dead.
Yeah. Or somebody else would like just like whoever was picked to be the new main character would just transmute very quickly into Blackjack 2.0. Would for whatever inkling of character Blackjack like is presented as having, like whoever the new person was would just assume all those traits.
Yeah.
Because Somber does not seem to have the capacity for empathy to like view the world through any other lens, like understand the difference in between character voices. So it would continue to be bad.
it would still be bad regardless. Yeah.
And eventually, like, I think I can predict that if that was the case, that the temptation would be irresistible to inevitably bring Blackjack back anyway.
Yeah. She's now a zombie horse. Also one last goofy tidbit to, like, just really sell the whole Jesus thing. It also took them three days to bring her back, too, so, like...
Yeah, great.
Yeah. Sure. Just as an action, like, just a one last twist of the knife. But yeah, I think that's our podcast though, outside of that. So remember to like review us, rate us, like us, comment, subscribe, hit the little notification button, give us stars where you can, write us reviews. I would love to read more reviews, like even like negative reviews, even if you're like, hey, you suck, die. Like I'd be interested in that. Cause it means like, at least that implies an engagement or more engagement. You can contact us at me. You can contact me specifically as DowitFi. I release a like podcast notification on my Twitter every single week, and it'd be great if people retweeted and liked that. You can contact Weirington at Weirington E, I think. Is that right?
Weirington, Weirington E at Twitter, or Weirington Esquire, or Weirington ESQ.
Yeah.
At Gmail.
Just at Google.
No, just at Google. I've underestimated my power.
I was Google. I was John Google the whole time.
Things are gonna get real fucking weird.
Oh boy. Look forward to more cybernetics.
Audience.
Dark gods. Evil AI. Rules of nature. Mega spells. BioShock Infinite, Metal Gear.
This is inarguably all been a terrible mistake.